Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I hope that you're enjoying this fine summer day. I got an early start. I took a run this morning, and I wonder if it was just a sheer coincidence that when I put on my iPod and my my running headphones and I turned on the music, that the first song that came up on the shuffle was Running on Empty. Running on Empty is a Jackson Browne favorite of mine, but it's not the greatest way to start a run. Anyway, I had a good run. I hope that you're doing something healthy on your own behalf, and just, you can start by listening to an hour of this program. We've got some interesting stuff in store, plus your phone calls, 888-302-3684 if you want to get through this hour. We're going to talk about a remarkable study on the effects of aged garlic extract, a.k.a. Kyolic aged garlic extract, because that's the major brand of this specific type of garlic. Actually, I interviewed the lead researcher on that in a podcast this week, Dr. Matthew Budoff, and I'm going to summarize some of the findings. We go on for about 40 minutes or so about the details of that study. You can check out the podcast at drhoffman.com. Please do, because it's in-depth. Also, we're going to talk about how the mainstream media has just discovered something that we've been on to for three decades, since the 1980s. We've been talking about this in integrative and complementary medicine for 30-plus years. The yeast connection makes a big splash in the mainstream media. It turns out that maybe, just maybe, we were right all along, despite the skepticism expressed by mainstream medicine. 888-302-3684. Of course, a big story this week has to do with salt and the low-salt diet, which is continually touted as the right way to go. In fact, you know, this often happens. Health authorities have varying guidelines, but the American Heart Association recommends that people consume less than 1,500 milligrams of sodium per day. That's virtually unattainable. Very hard to get that in the U.S. diet. The average American consumes about 3.5-4 grams or 3,500 to 4,000 milligrams of sodium per day. And the World Health Organization, the WHO, the World Health Organization, urges a little slightly higher threshold, less than 2,000. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, they say less than 2,300. And there have been initiatives, most famously in New York, to limit sodium on restaurant menus. Remember back in 2010, New York Assembly member Felix Ortiz introduced a bill which would lead to chefs being fined $500 every time they used salt in any of their recipes. He said that it would be, quote, a giant step in the right direction to help save lives lost to heart disease. Okay, well, under the administration of Mayor Bloomberg here in New York, got off to a good start by banning smoking in public facilities, but then they went a little over the top. They started to go after sodas, which, you know, admittedly, bad. You know, I haven't consumed soda in, you know, God knows when, and the vast majority of you don't, because you recognize just a bunch of wasted calories. If you're going to get liquid, you know, take in, you know, herbal tea or water. Don't add unnecessary calories. But to legislate this is perilous. And then they went one step further because they wanted to legislate low salt. Well, one of the problems when you decide on one or another nutritional orthodoxy is that the science may change, and that verities that we've come to put our faith in turn out not to be so true. So this week, in the New England Journal of Medicine, they had a very fascinating series of articles, three articles, which talk about the effects of sodium on the risk of cardiovascular disease, stroke, and death. And what's interesting is that the articles are completely at loggerheads. One of the articles, and it's a very fancy, sophisticated article. It's based on 107 studies, and they looked at thousands and thousands of individuals, and they did a very complex calculation of the risk of death attributed to consumption of sodium of just over 2,000 milligrams a day, which is, not coincidentally, the World Health Organization recommendation, keep below 2,000 milligrams per day. And what they say in this study, just published Wednesday in the New England Journal of Medicine, researchers at Harvard School of Public Health estimate that globally there are 1.6 5 million deaths from cardiovascular causes attributed to sodium consumption above that threshold of 2 grams per day. So, okay, well, the case closed, right? Finally, a study has validated that that amount of sodium kills well over a million people, nearly 2 million people globally every single year. So the recommendations are sound, right? Well, here's the problem. This is just a calculation. This is an extrapolation. What it's based on is the idea that if you restrict sodium, generally blood pressure goes down. It goes down a little bit. It goes down, you know, 3-5 points on average. But not always. This is the average person. For some people, it actually goes up, as we'll see later. But so they say, well, okay, blood pressure goes down 3-5 points. And then they look at the effects of blood pressure on cardiovascular risk. And with each point of blood pressure, your cardiovascular risk goes up a certain percentage. So they're extrapolating, and they're making it a calculation. However, what you got to point out, and I'm drilling down and interpreting this for you because it's complicated, the debate is ongoing, and it illustrates the complexity of trying to provide scientific proof for nutritional propositions. I mean, you've heard the benefits of the vegan diet. You've heard the benefits of the ultra-low-carb Atkins-type diet that is replete with meat and saturated fats. It's how are you going to prove these propositions? It's very difficult to prove. And even when it comes to something as simple as should we restrict salt or not, it turns out very hard to prove. Well, what they say here in the editorial that accompanies this article is that there is not a single study, not even one, that shows a benefit for having a sodium intake of less than 2,300 milligrams, because in order to prove that, you would have to take an enormous number of people and put them on a very low sodium diet for a long period of time, perhaps 5 or 10 or 20 years, and you have to see if it really works. Correlation is not causation. If you see something happening in the world and it turns out that it's associated with something, doesn't necessarily mean that by undertaking a trial where we lower people's sodium, that it's going to make them live longer in general. Some people, no question, should be on a low sodium diet. Some people have salt responsive hypertension, and you know, they will improve with lower sodium intake. But all right, I'm coming to the point here. In this self-same edition, came out just Wednesday, of the New England Journal of Medicine, there's an amazing study which shows quite the opposite. This new study tracked more than 100,000 people from 17 countries over an average of more than 3 years, which is a short time, but at least we're getting there, right? We're watching them for a long period of time. It found that those who consumed, get ready for this, those who consumed fewer than 3,000 milligrams of sodium, hold on now, they had a 27% higher risk of death or a serious event such as a heart attack or stroke in that period than those whose intake was a whopping 3,000 to 6,000 milligrams. You heard me right. The people on the low sodium diets did worse than the people who were on the moderate sodium diets. And It turned out that the risk of death or other major events increased, but it didn't increase that much, even with intakes of 6,000 and 7,000 milligrams per day. Now, what the authors admit is, once again, association is not causation. I mean, there's some studies where, look, if you're sick and if you have been told by your doctor or if you have congestive heart failure or if your blood pressure is high, you may reduce your sodium. But nonetheless, because you're sick, you may have a higher risk of dying, so these studies are sometimes messed up. But in this study, they controlled for that, and they said they can't really explain the fact that low sodium is harmful other than, check this out, when you lower sodium below about 3,000 milligrams per day, bodily systems kick in, which may raise your blood pressure. There's something called a renin-angiotensin system in your body that ensures that you maintain adequate pressure within your blood vessels and your circulatory system. So if you don't get enough sodium, you activate that system, and hello, you may get a reverse effect. Restricting sodium may actually cause your blood vessels to clamp down. Now, they don't know that this is necessarily the cause of the 27% higher risk of death in the people consuming less sodium. But the authors of an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine now say that calls to drastically restrict sodium are premature, and that we ought to really check it out before we embark on public policies to tell everyone that they should reduce their sodium intake. It's quite fascinating. The debate will continue, and in spite of conflicting findings, we're not yet ready to sign on to the proposition that everybody should go ultra low on sodium. And oh, by the way, high potassium intake, that's the key. That seems to be protective. Potassium comes from fresh fruits and vegetables. That turned out to make a difference in all of the studies in this week's New England Journal of Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why Kyolic? Well, all the numbers add up for your health. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement for heart health available on the market today. For over 40 years, Kyolic has been the leading garlic supplement in America. Kyolic is 50 times richer than raw garlic in active beneficial compounds. Kyolic is organically grown and aged for 20 months to enhance its nutritional value, creating beneficial compounds not found in fresh or powdered garlic, but only in aged garlic extract from our farms in California. For maximum purity. Over 750 scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA prove that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is working to enhance your body's immune function, protect your cells from free radical damage, and reduce the widest range of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Call today at 1-800-421-2998 for your free sample of Kyolic.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Let's talk now to Carol. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. Listen, I take a lot of vitamins, and I've been taking a lot of vitamins for a number of years. But, you know, I wonder, are there any tests that you could take which would show whether or not you really need some of the vitamins that you're taking? Is there any tests that...
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. Look, it really kind of goes to the heart of how I practice. I mean, I often see people, sometimes people with serious medical conditions, and sometimes I see people like you who are, you know, relatively healthy. They may be, you know, dealing with some minor problems, but they're taking a bunch of supplements. And the question is, you know, should they be taking the supplements, and how do we decide? So, you know, usually when I see somebody who's taken a bunch of supplements, I divide them into three categories. Like, I'll sometimes look at the supplement sheet that they give me with just a very exhaustive list of things that we talk about here in the show. And I'll see things that just don't make sense at all. I mean, I don't believe that they work. They may be downright harmful. So right away, I'll strike them off the list. Then there's some things which I'll see that people are taking where I heartily endorse their use of certain supplements just on a preventive basis, or maybe just keyed into their particular characteristics. Say that, you know, they're a postmenopausal woman and they're taking Vitamin K, or they're taking higher doses of vitamin D, or they're taking a supplement like Myostia Support, which is a balanced calcium supplement with other cofactors, and I'll say fantastic. And then there's sort of an intermediate category, which is, yeah, you know, it's optional. You could take this, but it's not going to be harmful. But, you know, it may be, you know, just speculative. It's like something where, yeah, just maybe that'll be good. So, you know, what do? Well, first of all, the first thing we do is we take a good history. We find out what people's health characteristics are. And we do an exam, and we do blood tests, and we see what's happening. And then we key the supplement recommendations to the findings. But can we test for vitamin levels? Well, the problem with testing for vitamin levels is that just because you have sufficient amounts of certain vitamins doesn't mean that you don't need higher amounts. Now, that might sound weird because the way that conventional medicine looks at vitamins is you don't need them unless you have a vitamin deficiency. Sure, if you have a severe vitamin B12 deficiency, you should take B12, but otherwise, you know, just get it from food. But you know, an example with B12 is, say you have a neurological condition. Maybe you have peripheral neuropathy, or maybe you have dementia, or you're headed towards Alzheimer's. You might want to take super high doses of vitamin B12, even B12 injections for therapeutic value. So the tests that show levels, I mean, I do them, and there's some very complex and exhaustive and sometimes expensive tests that we do. But I tend to shy away from unnecessarily screening for every single vitamin under the sun, because in a healthy individual, especially my clientele, people who already believe in taking vitamins, we often see very high levels. So we, you know, more will look at what you need. So that really, it's the art of and science of nutritional medicine. And it's controversial because some people believe that vitamins are completely unnecessary. So, I mean, I know that doesn't specifically help you, but it should give you an idea a little bit of what's going on. What do you think, Carol?
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and I thought maybe that the blood levels of vitamins wouldn't really be helpful. But, you know.
Yeah, because there's a difference between, you know, sufficient. I mean, there's a difference between deficiency, sufficiency, and optimal. So, for example, vitamin D, if it's under 20, you have a vitamin D deficiency. So it's over 20. Does that mean it's okay? Well, no. If your vitamin D is 22, then you probably have an insufficiency, and you really should have a vitamin D level of 40. But say you have a condition. Say you have heart disease, or say you have diabetes, or say you have an inflammatory condition like rheumatoid arthritis, or perhaps a neurological condition like multiple sclerosis, or cancer. We may want to push the vitamin D levels even higher, up to and close to what could potentially be levels that are toxic, staying on the right side of toxicity, but pushing it to optimal levels. So that's sort of how we operate, and that's the essence of my practice at the Hoffman Center. All right, when we return, we're going to talk about something highly controversial. It's the yeast connection. If you talk about the yeast connection to your doctor going to say, I don't believe in that, that's not for real, that's a fad. But wait a minute. Maybe the yeast connection, there is really something going on, because mainstream media is picking up on a strange condition, drunk without alcohol, food fermentation in the gut. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. We invite your phone calls. This is Intelligent Medicine.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. We'll get back to phone calls momentarily, but in the first hour, and some of you didn't hear the first hour, so if you want to hear the first hour, we put it up on Monday as a podcast, or next week you can station yourself in front of a computer or mobile device, and you can click on the link that we provide you at drhoffman.com, and you can listen live. But to hear the first hour podcast available Monday, we talked about, when it comes to eating, who's in charge here? Are you really in charge? Or are the intestinal microbes that inhabit your GI tract in charge? It's kind of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know, where people's bodies were commandeered by aliens and their behavior was affected. Well, as crazy as that may seem, we discussed at first hour that microbes in your intestinal tract may hijack your reward and satiety pathways and cause you to crave sugar and carbohydrates, in effect, feeding themselves at your expense. And so I found it amusing, since this is what I've been doing for the past 30-some years. When I first got into complementary medicine in the 1980s, they were introducing a theory. This was Dr. Orion Truss and Dr. Crook were talking about the yeast connection. And the yeast connection was the idea that you could have an overgrowth of yeast in your gastrointestinal tract, the result of too many antacids, the result of too many antibiotics, the result of too much sugar and refined carbohydrates. And this could make you feel lousy and cause all kind of health problems, even make you feel groggy, fatigued, and depressed, and toxic. And over the years, many times when I bring this idea up, patients come back to me and say, well, I talked to my doctor about this, and they say, there's no such thing. And I said, well, you know, I beg to differ. In my experience, it's very important. I've treated patients with antifungal medications and herbs and probiotics and low-carbohydrate diets. Well, it appears that 30 years after we in the field of complementary medicine have been addressing this problem, ABC News has seen fit to highlight what they term a rare and bizarre syndrome. Headline, drunk without alcohol, strange condition ferments food in the gut. And they cite a couple of cases here. Nick Hess, a 34-year-old waiter, he used to be active, swimming, biking, playing volleyball, became exhausted. He'd be watching TV. By the end of the evening, he would start to be confused. He would start slurring his speech. And he started to smell like he had alcohol in his breath, although he claimed he was a frequent drinker. And his even his wife became skeptical, thought he was a closet drinker. His doctors were suspicious that he was stashing booze and surreptitiously drinking. In 2011, Hess was arrested for operating a vehicle under the influence after he called the police when he said he was hit by an oncoming car. And when tested with a breathalyzer, he had three times over the legal limit of alcohol in his breath. Matthew Hogg from Middlesbrough, England, also went through similar experiences. His family spent over $60,000 in quest of an answer for his suffering from chronic stomach pain, exhaustion, fatigue, and mental confusion. So what was happening? Well, Otto Brewery syndrome, they say here on the ABC News site. It causes the stomach to use excess yeast in the intestine to ferment carbohydrates and other sugary foods into alcohol. After being tested for yeast, Hess results revealed that he had four times the normal amount of yeast. So his doctor had Hess completely change his diet to eliminate foods that break down to sugar, such as breads, pasta, and rice. And after just 4 weeks, lo and behold, Hess's mysterious symptoms vanished. Wow. Amazing. ABC News has now discovered the yeast connection. Hess says, actually, an expert here that's quoted says, it's not clear how many people suffer from Otto Brewery syndrome. But this particular researcher is determined to get the word out in order to spare others yeast of misery. I say, why bother? Because we in the field of complementary medicine have been addressing it for decades. And it's not, you know, it's like you rediscovered that the earth was round. I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. But, hey, you know, new paradigms, it takes a long time for them to be accepted. And at least it's gratifying that the yeast connection is making it into the mainstream. And, you know, you needn't be drunk or, you know, have high levels of breath alcohol to suffer from the yeast connection. Even tiny amounts of not just alcohol, but other harmful toxic substances that are fermented in the gut can make you feel lousy, can trigger inflammation, pain, cramps, allergy, cause you to have leaky gut. This is much more complex than just, you know, whether you are 4-plus intoxicated with high levels of blood alcohol. The yeast connection is an explanation for a lot of health problems that people experience. And it goes beyond just yeast, also comprising a harmful mix of bad bacteria, which we now call dysbiosis, this is one of the key concepts that helps us unravel complex medical and challenging problems. And we have tests to evaluate this are subtle ways of determining whether people may be suffering from the yeast connection or dysbiosis. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. We'll be back and answering more of your questions here on Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers. Whether you are getting ready for a once-in-a-lifetime vacation, flying to a business meeting, or just visiting friends, don't risk ruining your trip by neglecting to protect your digestive health. Pack award-winning Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics, one of the best lines of defense against traveler's tummy. Dr. O'Hara's convenient blister packs are portable and never need to be refrigerated, perfect for traveling. Backed by over 25 years of research, Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics use 12 strains of live, beneficial bacteria, combined in a centuries-old Japanese fermentation process. The result is a superior supplement that enhances immunity and digestion, which helps reduce the risk of getting sick while traveling. Stay healthy while traveling and remember to pack your probiotics. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics.
Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. As usual, towards the end of the show, we get lots of calls, and we'll only be able to answer a couple. But if you have a question, you can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we will endeavor to answer your question during our weekly Q&A with Layla, which you can listen to via drhoffman.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Keep your question pithy. All right, let's talk to Rosemarie. Welcome. Hi, Rosemarie.
Hello.
You're down. You're from Hello. Fort Worth, Texas. Do you listen to us directly through your
yes.
local radio station? What's that
no,
affiliate down there? Oh, you listen to the podcast.
WAP. But I
okay.
don't. You don't have. I don't know where you are here. I used to get you in Florida, and now I'm just listening to your podcast.
You're listening live for the listening live button. Great. Okay.
Okay.
What's your question?
I had a question for my particular, I'm 4'11", weigh 90 pounds, I'm going to be 72 next month. I have had I've been pre-diabetic for a long time. For the last 20 years, my fasting never goes below 100, maybe once in a blue moon, 105
right.
to 115. My baseline after I eat comes usually around 120. I do get spikes if I don't watch what I eat, if I eat too much rice or too much fruit or stuff.
Right.
It always comes back. I don't get hypos ever.
So I got a question for you. You have a question for you. Do you know what your hemoglobin A1C is? Because that's an important
yes.
number.
Well,
what is that, please?
It's around 6.
Okay, so
it's
that suggests that you're
even,
right. You're on the borderline of starting
yes.
to show diabetes. Okay,
yes.
So Rosemarie, what's a little disconcerting is that you are thin, relatively thin. You're short. You're 96 pounds. That's pretty close to 90 pounds. So you're virtually
yeah,
underweight.
Yeah, I've been this way all my life.
Right.
I'm
so
a very active person.
Yeah, what it suggests is that you may be experiencing the type of diabetes where obviously weight loss isn't going to help. And your pancreas is kind of wearing out.
Mm-hmm.
And so for you, diet is not going to be the answer alone. You may need something to help. You may actually may need a medication to help you with your blood sugar. Although, yeah, I would be reluctant to put you on medication. I think that you may want to try something like CM-Core, which is a berberine extract. It's a product that you can get at drhoffman.com. You may also try Gymnema Silvestri.
Gymnema, I have done all those things. Yeah, they never have.
Been there, done that, and it hasn't helped. So then, you know, what may happen, and you have to watch this very closely, is over time, as one ages, sometimes the pancreas wears out, and you may, and I hate to say this, you may begin to require insulin, because what your problem is, not that you're overproducing insulin, like certain type 2 diabetics have insulin resistance, they're making too much insulin, you know, you're probably not making enough, and eventually you may, if you cross 6'4", 6'6", 6'7", you know, towards 7, you may require insulin. Right now, probably not, and I think your doctor's not going to want to pull the trigger, but you got to watch that carefully. And you're the type of diabetic that I hate to see, because, you know, I love to see chubby, overweight diabetics, because that's a lot easier to deal with than if you, you know, a skinny, mini diabetic who, you know, doesn't need to lose weight, and you're probably on a great diet. So that's, you know, going to be a tougher problem, more challenging. So you need to take all the diabetic supplements. I presume you already do. You know, vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids and chromium and perhaps vanadium. We have a nice product called Diaxanol, which is a combo product that has a lot of the things that help blood sugar, including biotin. But, you know, still, with you, it's a challenging situation. All right, let me share this piece with our listening audience. This week on one of our Intelligent Medicine podcasts, we talked to Dr. Matthew Budoff about a great new study on aged garlic extract. It was featured at the 2014 International Garlic Symposium. I didn't even realize there's such a thing, but there's so much research on garlic that they get together every year and they talk about garlic research. The research involves using very sensitive imaging techniques to look inside the arteries, techniques that I often talk about and use with my patients, EBT heart scanning and CT heart scanning, looking at arterial plaque and calcium scores. And what they did was they gave patients either a placebo pill or aged garlic extract. I believe the dose was 500 milligram capsules of chiolic aged garlic extract. They gave them two twice daily versus a control. And what they found was a dramatic slowing in the progression of coronary plaque. They say that the cutting-edge technology confirmed that aged garlic extract slowed the progression of total plaque accumulation by as much as 80%. Now, these were patients who already suffered from metabolic syndrome or prediabetes, so they were at higher risk of accumulating plaque. And when I asked Dr. Budoff, did it work regardless of whether they were taking a statin medication, he said that there was an add-on effect even if they were taking a statin medication. So aged garlic extract definitely should be part of your cardioprotective program, especially if you've been told that you have plaque in your coronary arteries or in your carotid arteries. Very effective, according to research. And I got to congratulate the people at Wakanaga, the company that makes chiolic aged garlic extract, for investing the money to conduct this research. Very good research performed at Harbor UCLA Medical Center and at the University of Florida. You can find out about it via our podcast this week with Dr. Matthew Budoff at drhoffman.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I can't think of a place I'd rather be than right here behind this very microphone, providing you with, I hope, useful health information. Let's try our hand with Marianne. Marianne, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm glad to get you. I waited for almost an hour. Anyway, to make it short,
we're trying to make it realistic, like in a real doctor's office. So you got to wait.
Yeah, I know. Well, you're waiting a lot shorter than in my doctor's office, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's scary.
You have your own office, doctor?
Oh, indeed, yeah. But we're never late. If you're 5 minutes late, that's unusual.
Before
we really try to run on time.
Can I please ask you for phone number in your doctor's office?
Yeah, I'm not going to give it out. Just go to drhoffman.com. You can find out.
I don't have an email. I don't have an internet. Okay. Well, anyway,
look in the yellow pages. Whatever.
Okay. What state are you in?
I'm in New York. I'm located in Midtown Manhattan.
Go ahead. That's fine. Okay, I'll find out. Anyway, I had open heart surgery last year because I was rushed to the hospital with heart failure. But then I had open heart surgery, mitral valve repair, which was successful. And I even got an echocardiogram just 2 weeks ago. It's fine. The only thing is that my blood pressure, which was never high, even before the heart failure, now I have to take Ramipril to protect the heart and lower the blood pressure. And they say it protects kidneys. But however, the creatinine in the kidneys is always going up when I take that. When I stop taking it on my own, which is not such a good idea, but I tried it, the creatinine goes down, the kidney functions almost up to par, but the high blood pressure goes up. I don't know what to do. I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. And I have a doctor who says to me, you've got to do everything the doctor says, otherwise don't go to the doctor.
Yeah, I get it. You know, so let me explain what happens. You know, when you had a faulty heart, literally the blood was flowing back into your heart. So what happens is after the surgery, your heart is pumping better. And when your heart pumps better, what might have been low or normal blood pressure turned into high blood pressure because you're actually getting the blood out and pushing at a higher pressure. So the result of your surgery that was successful, that saved you, is going to be that from now on, you're probably going to have high blood pressure. Now, Ramipril is of a class of medications, ACE inhibitors, that generally over time protect the kidney. And so it is a little paradoxical that your numbers, your kidney numbers, your creatinine in particular, go up when you take this medication. But long term, you really need to, because you're going to protect your brain, you're going to protect your heart from enlarging further because you have heart failure. Unfortunately, this is something that you need to take. But you also need to take, other supportive nutrients like coenzyme Q10 because you have partial heart failure, magnesium, fish oil, perhaps carnitine and ribose for your heart. And maybe, just maybe, your heart will pump more efficiently so that your creatinine won't be going up. So, it's not just a matter of should you take the medication or not. You need additional nutritional support. But don't worry. You need to take the medication, lock and load, because it's going to help you long term. All right. Thanks very much for joining us, folks. I really enjoyed today, and I thank you for all your great calls. Enjoy your feedback. Check us out at drhoffman.com, podcasts, sign up for the newsletter, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter.